Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I'm going to start off with a little illustration here this morning. So there's a new bride, and she is making her first big dinner for her husband and tries her hand at her mother's brisket recipe. And so she cuts off the ends like her mother always did, and the husband thinks as he's eating it, "This is so delicious." But he asks her, "Why do you cut off the ends of the brisket? That's the best part." She answers, "Well, I don't know. That's what my mother always did." So she asks her mother, "Hey, why do you cut off the ends of the brisket when you make this great recipe?" And the mother says, "Well, I don't know. That's what your grandmother always did." And so the next week, they go to the grandmother's house, and she prepares her famous brisket recipe, again cutting off the ends. And the young bride is very sure she's missing something. So she asks her grandmother, "Why do you cut off the ends of the brisket?" And she says, "Well, it doesn't fit in my pan. That's why I cut it off." A lot of times with tradition, we kind of just follow blindly, right? Tradition, we remember the quirky things. My brother-in-law is Canadian, blonde hair, very pale skin. And my sister, full-blooded Chinese, and he takes such an interest to Chinese culture. And he always asks when we go to dim sum, or we go here, we go there, he's like, "Oh, why do you tap the table when they pour tea? Why do you do this? Why do you do that?" And my sister always says, "Well, I don't know. That's what our parents taught us. That's what we always used to do." And so now he's taking this giant interest in learning our culture, learning everything he can, little intricacies of our culture. And right now, actually, he knows more than us, stories of why we celebrate mooncake and things like that. It's really funny to us when we watch this pale-skinned, blonde-haired guy tell us all the history of Chinese things. But it's really funny. Sometimes we don't stop and ask why we do things, right? Why culturally some people do things. Today's passage, I feel like, is more along the lines of culture and tradition. And Paul's addressing something in that time and in the church and in that era. And this passage is highly, highly, highly debated. I know as a church, we have history with this passage as well. And I'm not up here to take sides of the theological part. I don't want to do that. But instead, what I want to do is deliver this passage to you as an illustration of what Paul's trying to tackle in the entire letter of 1 Corinthians. So we're going to draw out what Paul's trying to say to the church, okay, using this passage. Now, Pastor Jack, when he was asking a few of us to speak, he had a list of passages. And when I saw that this passage was on the list, I immediately emailed Pastor Jack and I was like, "I want to do this," just because it's so challenging. It's a very different passage. Now, my wife, she's very, very, very girl power. If you tell her girls can't do something or women can't do something, she'll step up and say, "No, they can." And she'll try to prove you wrong every single time. And so when I saw this passage, I thought of her, I thought of the challenge, and I immediately asked Pastor Jack, I said, "Hey, I want to tackle this, if this is okay, because it's such a highly debated passage." Now, tradition is important. I feel like it reinforces values. I think it honors those before us in keeping with the traditions and things like that. Traditions also create an avenue for lasting memories. Like, if every Thanksgiving you go out and play football, it's one of those things. It's easy to identify when things are out of place if you continue to follow traditions. But if we follow traditions blindly and not understanding why we do it, I feel like sometimes the tradition does nothing. They're just movements. We just go along, and they don't really mean anything. So for me, it's important to understand a tradition, why we do the things we do, so that it brings honor and respect to the right person or to the right things. So Our passage today is from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 2 to 16. And it's pretty lengthy here, and it's very wordy, so if you could follow along here. It says, "Now I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions even as I delivered them to you. But I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ, the head of a wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head, but every wife who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head, since it is the same as if her head were shaven. For if a wife will not cover her head, then she should cut her hair short. But since it is disgraceful for a wife to cut off her hair or shave her head, let her cover her head. For a man ought not to cover his head, since he is in the image and glory of God. But woman is in the glory of man. For man was not made from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. That is why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. For as a woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman. And all things are from God. Judge for yourselves. Is it improper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not nature itself teach you that if a man wears long hair, it is a disgrace for him? But if a woman has long hair, it is for her glory, for her hair is given to her for a covering. If anyone is inclined to be contentious, we have no such practice, nor do the churches of God." Now, if you picked up the Bible and just turned to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and you read this, you're like, "Well, what is Paul saying?" And it's kind of weird to see just this passage. I feel like in order to understand this passage, we need to get to the heart of the matter. By doing that, we first have to understand Paul's writing style. Paul is very, very, very smart. And he is taught from the most intelligent people in the greatest of schools back in that time. And so when he's writing this letter to the church, he's trying to make an argument. And he's writing it almost like a research paper or an essay or something to that effect, where there's a thesis, there's a body, and there's a conclusion. Okay, so to understand what Paul's writing and trying to display, we first have to understand what his thesis is. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10, in his introduction, it says, "I appeal to you, brothers, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be united in the same mind and the same judgment." Now, this word judgment here in the Greek, when we translate it, there's a lot of different words. So here it says judgment. In some other translations, it says opinion or intention or purpose, so that we have the same mind or same purpose or same intention. Okay, and so with this, when he's writing and addressing the church, we also kind of have to understand what the church is going through. Pastor Jack tackled it a few weeks ago, what the church is going through. There's a lot of arguing in the church. And if you can think, you know, here on the West Coast, we're very progressive in our thought. We like to push the envelope, right? Today, you know, there's women can be presidents, right? Women can be CEOs. Women can be leaders of countries. And so if you think 2,000 years ago with this church, they were progressive. They were trying to break the mold. In the church, there were a lot of Jewish customs. But at the same time, inside those churches, there were Greeks. And so they were coming from very different cultures and different traditions. So Paul is trying to tackle a lot of these issues in this one letter. So if that's our thesis, okay, that we have the same mind and the same purpose in the church, then he makes an argument before chapter 11. So if you go a little bit before chapter 11 to chapter 10, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23 to 33, it says, "All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience. For the Lord is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If one of the unbelievers invites you to dinner and you are disposed to go, eat whatever is set before you without raising any question on the ground of conscience. But if someone says to you, 'This has been offered in sacrifice,' then do not eat it for the sake of the one who informed you, for the sake of their conscience. I do not mean your conscience, but his. For why should my liberty be determined by somebody else's conscience? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of that for which I give thanks? So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I try to please everyone in everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that they may be saved." So this comes right before he talks about head coverings and short hair and long hair. And it's interesting. If we start piecing the puzzle together here with his thesis and this argument, okay? So first, Paul tells us to be united in the same mind and in the same purpose. And then he says, give no offense, okay, so that everyone may be saved. Those are the key points for 1 Corinthians chapter 11 when we dive into it. So we have to stick that in our back pocket when we read 1 Corinthians chapter 11. This is his goal. This is the purpose why he's writing this, okay? And so chapter 11 is more of an illustration. He's trying to point us in this direction where we may be together, okay, or the church in that matter. So if we break down chapter 11, okay, in the first part it says we need to understand respect for authority before leading. In chapter 11, verse 3, we're going to go back to it a little bit. It says, "But I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ, the head of a wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God." Now, he's not saying that women are the slave of men, okay? Because he also says that God is the head of Christ. So it doesn't mean that Christ is God's slave. That's not what he's trying to tackle by arguing this or putting it in the letter. What he's trying to say is that submission is mutual commitment and cooperation to achieve a goal. We have to work together, okay? But there's always this saying that everyone's either a chief or an Indian, right? We can't have everyone as a chief, and we can't have everyone as an Indian. Someone has to be a leader, someone has to be a follower. And in this, he's trying to describe that, where God is leading Christ, okay? And Christ is leading man, and man is helping to lead woman. But we're all still equals. In verse 11, he kind of says that, or he notes it. In verse 11, Paul says, "Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. For as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman, and all things are from God." So we're not independent of one another. We need each other, men and women, Christ and God, all of us together. We need each other to accomplish our goals. We need each other to move forward. And it's this mutual commitment that we can go and move forward. So by Paul writing this in the very beginning of verse 3 in chapter 11, he really is trying to point to us, hey, we have a goal to achieve, and let's follow together. Back then in this church and the society as a whole, it was very much so men-driven, okay? And that's how they're following along. So he's just pointing everyone back to tradition, okay? And if we follow through from verse 4 to verse 8, he's not telling anything new. This is all regurgitated. This is what tradition was like. I don't know if any of you have ever been to a traditional Jewish church or synagogue or a Greek Orthodox church. Some churches that are built, they actually have two entrances. Okay, so when you go to the synagogue or you go to church, one entrance is for men, one entrance is for women. And at the very head of the entrance for the women, there is a place where there are coverings for the women. So you can grab it as you're going into the synagogue, and you can place it on your head. If you forget to bring your scarf or you forget to bring your own covering. That's how it was back then. Some churches today still do that, okay? So that's the society that they're in. And so he's not saying anything new. For us to understand, we have to kind of understand their tradition and their culture as well. If women did not have a cover on their head, that meant that they had very loose morals, okay? So you have these very traditional Jewish people in this church and in this city. And they're coming in here and they have their heads covered. And they have this Greek culture where maybe some of the women didn't believe in the head coverings. And so they would come to church. And so immediately, the Jewish people would look at the Greeks and say, oh, she doesn't have a head covering. She's very loose morals. And it was kind of looked down upon, okay? And so Paul's trying to bring everyone together, okay? This is the early church where Jesus had just passed away and risen again. And they're trying to develop the church. So Paul's saying, hey, you know what? Our goal is to save people. And we can't save people if we believe different things. And we're coming in here and everyone's pointing fingers and everyone's getting mad at each other. And so he's saying, hey, we need to come together and follow these traditions. Another tradition that Paul's writing here is with short hair and long hair. In this city, if a woman had short hair, it meant that she was a prostitute. Okay? If men had long hair, it meant that that man was a prostitute. Okay? So the issue here and what Paul's covering is not an issue of whether or not a woman should pray. Okay? He's not saying that. What he's pointing at is if a woman prays and leads the church, you have to do it in a respectful manner where your hair is long so that people don't think you're a prostitute. And if you're a man, you should have short hair so people don't think you're a prostitute. And if you're a woman leading prayer, you also have to have your hair covered so that people don't think or see you in any less light than they really should. You have to lead with respect. People are following you. And why this matters is because, going back to the previous, so that everyone may be saved. We have to come together and lead people with respect so that they may be saved. People were leaving the church. People weren't believing in the leaders. People weren't listening to the teachings anymore because of these small things. So all of this goes back to the thesis, okay? And all of what he's trying to point at is we have to have the same mind and same intentions with no divisions. Coming from two different cultures and bringing this church together, it was difficult because they had such different cultures and they weren't getting along. In the very beginning, or in chapter 10, we have to respect others' opinions and beliefs. And that's what Paul was trying to get at too. He said, so whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I try to please everyone in everything. So in a sense, he's trying to say, hey, I'm going to cover, or women, you should cover your heads to please all the other people, okay? because it's driving them away from the church. It's driving them away from Christ. We're trying to point everyone to Christ, okay? And how you do that, how you lead people to Christ sometimes is by respecting their traditions and respecting their culture. And Paul's throwing this in as an illustration, okay? Now, if we skip along, there's another passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 33 to 34, where he also mentions the role of women. And again, if we just read this, a lot of people would have a lot of problems in church, okay? So I'm going to read it starting in 14, verse 33. It says, "For God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace, disorder and confusion." Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to read it again. So it says, "For God is not a God of confusion, but of peace." And then if we go to 34, it says, "The women should keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but should be in submission, as the law also says. If there is anything they desire to learn, let them ask their husbands at home. For it is shameful for a woman to speak in church. Or was it from you that the word of God came from? Or are you the only ones it has reached?" Now again, if you just read this verse, you're like, Paul, what are you trying to say here? To understand this passage, we have to look a little bit before. In chapter 14, right before Paul says this, okay, actually, Paul throws this in the middle of a passage. He's talking about spiritual gifts, and he's talking about speaking in tongues in the church. And while he's talking about speaking in tongues, he throws this in the middle of this passage. And then he goes on and talks about speaking in tongues again right after this. And so it's kind of weird that he throws this in, but what he's trying to get at is that God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace. Now, synagogues back then and churches back then, again, once you go into your separate segregated door, right? So a door for men and a door for women. What would happen is when a woman went into their entrance, they would sit on their side of the church. Sometimes what would happen is there is a curtain divided, okay, that was dividing the room. So one half of the room were women, the other half were men, with a giant curtain segregating them. In other churches, there would be a room that would be specifically for women, and then everything else would be for men, okay? So in this early church, they don't have churches yet. They don't have their own buildings. So they're borrowing these buildings and renting it out, these old synagogues and these other churches. And so they're trying to be progressive. They're trying to say, hey, yes, like in Galatians, Paul says that we are no longer under the law. But here he says, well, we have to be submission under the law. So what he's trying to get at is pointing everyone to say, hey, in order for us to move forward as a church, we have to be united by following the traditions first until we can establish something. When these women went into their own separate rooms or into their designated areas, sometimes what they would do is they would try to yell between the curtains to their husbands or yell over the curtains. And so it ended up becoming chaos. Someone was teaching and then there was yelling and hollering all over the place because they're trying to understand. And so Paul's saying, hey, you know what? God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace. And we have to have order in our service. People were standing up and they were speaking in tongues and no one was understanding. They're like, you're just babbling. And then they would be yelling and shouting and then all this craziness. Like if you can imagine Pastor Jack speaking up here, all of our cell phones going off and then picking up our cell phones and then talking to the people in service on our cell phones, it just becomes chaos, right? We can't learn. We don't understand. And that's what Paul is trying to prevent. So he's going to the polar opposite extreme and he's saying, hey, you know what? In order to bring peace and order back into the service, let's just follow tradition. Let's just follow what's been set before us so that we can meet our goals. And our goal is to save people. Our goal is to bring people to Christ. And that's what Paul's trying to tackle in this passage. In this passage and the passage in chapter 11. That culture and tradition and that respect is going to lead people to Christ. And is going to bring people to God. Today, culture looks a little bit different, right? Society as a whole looks very different than what it was back then. Some of the cultural norms today, we have very different use of language. We cut words short. We make words super long. I went to college in Santa Cruz, and so we used to use the word gnarly a lot. And, you know, if I said gnarly in front of the kids today, like the junior hires and stuff, they're like, well, what does gnarly even mean? And I'm like, I had to think about it. I had to try to explain what gnarly meant. It's like, you know, if your hair is like super messy, but yet really cool at the same time, you'd say, oh, that's pretty gnarly. And they're like, I don't get it. You know, we use these strange words to describe things. So socially, we have very different cultural norms compared to what Paul is trying to tackle here. And so you have to remember that Paul, when he's writing 1 Corinthians, he's trying to tackle a point to that church in that specific time. And even though there's a lot of things that are very useful, if we just read all of this at face value, it's very difficult to understand sometimes, especially passages like this, where he's telling women not to speak in church. But he has a purpose behind it, and truly it's to bring peace back into that church so that they can drive people towards Christ. And I think that is what our goal should be in the church. When we read passages like this, when we think of the small things at church, oh, should I wear this shirt? I wore it yesterday, but it's just church. I don't know if anyone's going to have a problem with it. Things like that, right? Before we go to church, before we talk to someone about Christ, some of the kids always ask me, well, is it okay to swear? Is it okay to, you know, cuss and things like that? And a lot of times, I have to say, well, we have to be careful of our words because what if we want to save them one day? What if we want to invite them to church? If I start cussing in front of them, they're going to think that I'm not a good Christian. And they're going to think that, oh, I don't need to go to church because you cuss and I cuss. So what's the difference, right? A lot of times we have to watch what we do to help the person next to us, to be respectful of our neighbors, right? If I want to bring my friend to church, I don't know if I want to cuss in front of them or swear in front of them or say bad things or do bad things because ultimately I want to lead them to Christ. And that's what Paul's trying to get at with this. We want to do things with the same purpose, with the same mind and the same understanding so that we can bring people to church, so that we can bring people to Christ. And sometimes, yeah, it is a little uncomfortable. Paul says that if I'm eating and it offends the person next to me, I'm going to stop eating my dish. Now, if you eat like I do, that's pretty hard. You know, I don't want to stop eating whatever's good just because the person next to me has a problem with it, right? But that's what Paul's trying to get at. He's saying, hey, this person has a problem. And if I want to bring them to Christ, maybe I should respect what they think. Maybe I should respect how they feel. So I'm going to put my awesome rib to the side and I guess I'll grab a salad. It's that kind of thinking, okay? So hopefully with this passage and going through this, it gives us a little bit of clarity about what Paul's trying to write here. Again, we're not trying to take theological sides, but really we're trying to bring this passage into light. And trying to understand what Paul is trying to tackle. And, you know, the debates and all the theology, I leave that to you guys. And you can email Pastor Jack, hopefully not all at once, if you guys have questions. But yeah, we want to, as a church, as a body, we want to have the same mind. We want to go through with the same intentions. And our hope, right, is to bring Christ to different people, to our coworkers, to the nation, right? And sometimes by doing that, we have to remember where they're coming from. We have to remember what they understand and what they feel offended, right? Like if I wore shoes on white carpet in a Chinese household, people would look at me funny, right? Especially if my shoes are super dirty. It's just being polite. It's being respectful of that culture and that tradition. Let me pray for us. God, we thank you so much for this opportunity for us to come together as a church, to learn more about you, to understand you, to tell other people about you, and so that we can come together as a community to be on the same page, to learn, God. I pray that you would help us this week and through our lives, God, to continue to be mindful of other people, other people's cultures, other people's traditions, even other people's rules, God. I know that it can be difficult. I know that it is hard sometimes because we don't like it when people tell us no, and we don't like it when people tell us that we're doing something wrong. But I pray that, God, you would help us to be mindful, to be humble enough to respect what other people feel is right and wrong. I pray that you would give us guidance, God, on all these issues as we try to lead our friends to Christ, as we try to bring them to church, as we try to tell others about you, God. I pray that you would help us and give us the words to speak as we're doing these things. God, I pray for your blessing. I pray for your help. In your name, Jesus.